Solve the World, Episode 93. Jenna's Story. What's your first memory? Do you remember? Think long and hard about it. Convince yourself you've got it in your head. Think hard. Okay, got it? Do you? Good. Now, push past it. Remember something older than that memory. If you try, you just might find it. You. Yeah, you. Listening to this voice. You. Think on it. Thing about your life, well, your childhood, your growing up years, is that there's nothing interesting about it. Nothing at all. Except maybe Red Jeb. It's different now, your life, of course. You grow up, you make decisions, interesting things happen. And they happen to you. So, even if they're boring, they're interesting. But it's not just the now that becomes interesting. But the past also starts becoming interesting by looking at it now. Does that make sense? It's because when you look at it now, it's a spectacle. You look at it like looking at monkeys in a zoo. The memory, the feeling, whatever it is that you have in the past, it's there, locked away comfortably behind a glass wall. You can see it, in a way, react to it. But, it's not lived out anymore. You see all the tremendously boring, slow, black moments at once. Now, seeing them all at once, it's like a rainbow. But living it, you can't imagine. Even now, you can't imagine what it's like anymore. You did. You lived through it. That was you. But, it's so different now. You're a lifetime away from it. And you have understanding. Now you have a box of ideas to put your experience into context. You see, you were born in Louisiana. You know this because of the Louisiana stamps that Red Jeb put on his letters. It's funny. He lived right next door. He hand-delivered the mail. He feared the government, hated Big Brother, yet he always put stamps on his envelopes. Funny guy. There is a first memory. To remember it precisely. To envision not a memory of the memory. Not the memory of you replaying it, but the real memory of it. It's hard. But it is there. Trapped way down. Until recently, you dreamed variations of it every single night. Close your eyes. Go ahead. Do it. What do you see? There's darkness. Darkness and only darkness. Open them. There, too, is darkness. But you don't know it. You don't see it as darkness. To your mind's eye, it's a vastly different world. There's little light in it. The room you're in is dark, nearly pitch black. But you don't know this. How could you? There's a sliver of light. Comes in just below the door. Light from the other room. There are no windows. There are jackets, though. Dozens of jackets. And you share the carpeted floor with a kaleidoscope of shoes and high heels. It is, obviously, a closet. But in this, your earliest memory, you don't know that yet. Closet. Closet is world. Where the light comes from, sometimes it opens and a shadowed figure, a voice, harsh and high-pitched, pitches your plate of food in. Food is usually mac and cheese, but sometimes it's nice, sometimes it's different. slices of ham and mashed potatoes, salmon, spared no expense. But the best part, the part you learn to savor as you age in that room, is the sucker. No matter what, with every meal, there's always a lollipop. Your mom loves you. That's why there's always a lolly. You have only a glimmer of a concept of time, what it is, but it must have been days, sometimes, between meals. No matter what, though, whatever hunger pains, whatever boredom, you had hope. Hope beyond hope. Obviously, life in the closet taught you that no matter the bad times, there's something sweet at the end of the long endurance. There's always a lolly at the end of the road. You love suckers. Just talking about it right now, your mouth salivates. You've been in dark places since then, but you feel like a different person, like someone with a different past. It's hard to explain. Never mind that. Back to the earliest memory. The walls. What you could see of them looked gray to you. Well, you didn't have a concept of color, really. Life was a spectrum of grays. But in a sense, you found great solace in the hue, the temperament of the wall. Not the wall where the door was. The door that held the light and, on rare occasion, opened. That door was too frightening to look at most of the time. You looked at the opposing wall, the other side of the room. Yeah, the opposing wall. How can you explain this? Gosh, okay. It wasn't a wall to you. It wasn't a wall. It was reality. The border of reality. Life ended at the gray wall. It was, what, a wall with a sort of plaster of Paris coat on top of it? You know what I'm talking about? So it was grooved, kind of pockmarked, like the bumps, the ridges on a globe that represents mountains. Kind of felt like that. You'd spend hours following the contours with your hand. The wall was the edge, the end of reality. You never thought to imagine that there was anything past it. That's the difference, right? We see a wall, and we think of it as something that holds us in. We naturally associate walls with an in and out. There's space inside, and there's space outside. But you didn't think this way. Well, again, in your earliest memories, you didn't think at all. At least, not in the way that you do now. Not in a way that you can even really grasp now. You know you thought, but you don't know how you thought. You were a different person then. You didn't have language, so your thoughts were unconnected? You lived in a little body, and you thought thoughts that language can't describe. But that's neither here nor there. The wall. The earliest memory. Still haven't gotten to it. Okay. One day, that gray edge of your world changed. It's easiest to describe it as you understand it now. Trying to express what it meant to you on that day, it's a task too far beyond your capabilities. So, here's what it was. Mold. The wall was rotting from the inside, and a green blob appeared, piercing through just under the surface. You have to understand. You have to understand. You have to. This wasn't just mold to you. This was monumental, sensational, astronomical, fantastical, beyond the wildest dreams of any of your four-year-old mind's thoughts. Whatever. Maybe you were five. You're not sure. You guess at your age. You don't say this much, ever, maybe. But you've been telling yourself you're 17 for years now. Who knows how old you actually are? How could you know? No one told you. You didn't have a concept of time back then, so how are you supposed to know something like that? There is no birthday. It's just another mystery just outside your reach. Another mystery with a worthless answer. The mold signified a breaking of reality. The edge of existence just vacillated. It just moved. It was sick. It's funny. You don't think you're projecting when you say this, but you're pretty sure, even then, way back then, however old you were, even though you had no concept of mold, what that could be, no concept of rot or whatever, you knew that this was bad. The wall, your fabric for all reality, was sick. It was hurting. It was in a bad way. You knew it when you saw it. Something was wrong. It's your earliest memory because it changed you. You knew from that moment on, life was broken somehow. Things weren't the way they were supposed to be. You started crying, wailing like a baby. Maybe you cried before then, but it doesn't feel like it. You cried a lot in the coming days and weeks. Months, maybe. You don't know. After the mold. The mold brought new thoughts. Slowly, you started to plan in a weird way. One day, you made a dash out the door when the door opened. The light of the outside world was too much. You had no way to understand things like windows, trees, clocks, televisions, chairs, any of it. You got past the shadow creature, but tripped and stayed on the ground, stunned by what you saw, which was mostly just light, unbearable light, brightness. Back then, the light was more blinding than the darkness. You could see less in the light than you could in the dark. The shadow figure grabbed you, threw you back in the closet, hurt you a little, scraped you up. That time, she left you alone in there for a long time. You went God knows how long without food or water. You remember licking the walls. It's funny, all it would have taken back then to escape would be just to turn the doorknob and pull the door open. But no one had ever shown you how to open a door. And the door represented scary things. You hid from the door sometimes. Mostly, you sat and cried. Solitude is bad. They say it makes you go mad. But that's as an adult. That's when you know what you're missing out on. What did you know? Only that the light was frightening. When there was more light, when the door opened, yes, there was usually food. That was good. But now there was also the fear of the unknown beyond, and the fear that the shadow figure, Mother, would hurt you. You were starving. Your belly swelled up. Your tongue stuck to the roof of your mouth. You think, you're not sure. The memory is a little fuzzy. A little too fuzzy. But you think you ate some shoes. You think. Eventually, the door opened again. Food came, and of course, the blissful sucker. But that time too, something else came. The shadow figure, Mother, plugged in a square little black and white television and turned it on. Shut the door and left me with this crazy thing. The madness, what madness? You can't imagine. You cannot imagine what that was like. The madness. You cried, you wailed, you pounded at the door. Suddenly the door was less scary than this thing. You feared it. You hid behind all the jackets for who knows how long, scared of this light-emitting thing and the tones, the frequencies. It hurt your ears constantly, constantly. But over time, you figured it out. And you began to watch. You watched every moment of every show that came on PBS. You grew to learn. This was your birth, your real birth into society and the way life works for humans. You started to learn language. You saw humans, and maybe most importantly, for the first time, really, you saw yourself. The warm glow of the TV reflected enough light for you to see your hands, your feet, your belly. The light from under the door was never enough really to make out the details of your own body. Now you could. The first real lesson you remember learning from the TV, oddly enough, is that smell is important. People care about it. And your poop that piled up and cluttered one corner of the room, not to mention your fingers and clothes, smells bad. Really bad. The television taught you that you were a bad child, because you did nothing like the people from the light did. Good children and good adults smell good. You don't. Also, it should be noted, you learned what a television was when you saw people watching TV on your TV. That was a very strange moment. Before then, it was this weird orb. A teleporter spotlight thing. You made 1,000 assumptions about what it was that proved to be wrong. You thought the people in the light box saw you. You thought you were the people in the light. Then, somehow, you convinced yourself that you were controlling the people in the light box. That they were somehow a manifestation of your will or something? That's obviously a more cogent and profound description of what you kind of were thinking than the way, the form in which you actually were thinking in. You don't need to hear a boring lesson about how the person standing in front of you came from being a hopeless animal child to being a relatively successfully functioning adult. The boring details are boring. You've had enough boredom from one lifetime. No need to keep going in it. From the television, you did learn to open the door. You ran, but you didn't see the screen door coming. Nope, you should have. A screen door is not invisible, as it turns out. It'd be one thing if it were a glass door, you know, see-through, perfectly see-through. It wasn't. It was a regular old front screen door to a mobile home amidst a mobile home park paid for by government subsidies. Nevertheless, when you tried to run free, you got all tangled up and caught up and torn up in the screen door. Mother caught you. She beat you, threw you in the closet. Then you surprised her. You spoke to her. In English. Soon after that, she let you out. She'd get angry and throw you back in, but from that time forward, you lived more outside of the room, the closet, than inside. Okay, let's jump forward a moment. You learned over time how your reality diverged drastically from, you know, the average child. Your mother suffered from a form of schizophrenia. She, along with hundreds of others, had committed crimes, served time in federal jail, and then, rather than be released, she was allowed a certain level of freedom. She was given a job, ironically, working at the state penitentiary, a home, free food, and a small stipend to live on. All this was provided for her. In return, a federal worker was assigned to her home to come by and check in, make a sweep of the house, etc., etc., every other day. Everyone that lived in this mobile home community was in the same boat. They all lived by the same rules. They were all the disturbed people of the state of Louisiana. Folks that the modern era said couldn't be put in chains because that would be wicked, but they were too unsafe to let loose completely free, no strings attached, in the world. So this was some sort of weird happy medium. Recep Heller, again, our neighbor, was one of these midway committed ones. He was convinced in just about every conspiracy there ever was. But always, always, it came back to the communists. They were the devils haunting every store, sneaking around every thought. There was a time, you don't know, maybe 2 or 3 months, wherein Recep confessed to you that he was afraid he was himself being invaded by communists in his mind. For Recep, the commies were so strong that they could invade you from within. So he was at war with himself. You saw some of the stab wounds from that physical battle. But for whatever reason, you guess because he knew you had never been outside the mobile home, he trusted you more than himself. He believed you were commie-free, maybe the only pure person left on Earth. You loved Recep. He showed you what friendship was. He took care of you. You'll never forget him because of that. But now you carry with you a certain sadness. Recep was your best friend, maybe the best friend you'll ever have. And yet, he kept the lie alive. He went along with Mother's story. As soon as you were really old enough to speak and really hear, the shadow, your mother, filled your mind with a certain fable. She told you that the air outside was poisoned, and that she alone, along with a lucky few, had some sort of immunity to a gas floating in the sky. A plague of sorts. Ironic. To be honest, it was hard for you to accept the plague as reality when it hit, because you spent most of your teenage years trying to deprogram yourself from your mother's deception. She said that you would die within minutes of walking outside. The story is laughable. You know that now. But how could you know then? She also convinced you that everything on the TV was years and years old. She said that the television stories ran in 10-year cycles, Every 10 years, the television loops would end, and it would bounce back and start a new 10-year cycle of old stories and old, quote, breaking news, a decade long. Rinse and repeat. The world was on a 10-year repeating cycle. Every 10 years. But when you are only 10 years old, how can you deny this? What tools do you have in your mind to say, no, that's not true? You don't. You don't have those tools, so you kind of accept it. One day, Mother left. She never returned. The way the government program worked, a big box of frozen and airtight foods were dropped off at your front door every Monday. So there was always going to be food. And you see, Mother was using her stipend from the government to pay off the lady that was supposed to check the building every other day. The government worker or whatever. You think she didn't do this when you were really little, and that's why she kept you in the closet to hide you. But that doesn't completely make sense, because surely the smell would have tipped her off. So, you're not sure, but at least once you were let out of the closet, once you kind of lived in the living room area, that's why no one ever came by. That's why no one checked up. Mother had paid them off. That's how she bought her freedom. But apparently, she got tired of you and wanted freedom from you. You should be clear. She never really tried to hurt you. She never maliciously beat you or anything like that. The worst things were just being thrown back in the closet. She didn't seem to have maliciousness in her. I think if she did, she would have killed you. But she didn't want to do that. She didn't want to kill. Don't kill. But she wasn't above leaving you alone in the house forever to perish. That's when Recep came in. He filled the void. He became a friend and father figure. At first, he just dropped by letters. Once you learned to write, you wrote back. He would send back the letters in the early years with a red pen, noting all the grammar and spelling errors that you made. You would write him, and every time you would write him, asking him to come on over to play. Eventually, you coaxed him to do that, to come and visit. Leaving that world was a slow progression. You were traumatized by the outside world, not just of the supposed poisonous gas in the sky, but of life entire. You'd never been in a crowd, never been in the same room with more than one person at one time. You figured out pretty early on, had to, that if you didn't at least get to the front door, open the front door, and grab the box of food that was dropped off every Monday morning, then you were going to die of starvation. So you at least made it out to the front door, and so little by little you saw the poisonous gas deception for what it was. Even though Recep continued to say that it wasn't a lie. You never knew, you still don't, who your father was. For a while, you thought it had to be Recep. It's amusing. When he came over, you mostly watched TV together. He taught you that it was more valuable to watch documentaries than to watch stupid movies and kids' shows. But monkey see, monkey do. He loved those silly human competition TV shows. Everything from, like, Survivor to The Bachelor to Dancing with the Stars. He was a funny guy. We watched him together, and he would always get really strong opinions about who should be kicked off the island, and then get really mad. You're pretty sure he's dead now. He was dying when you left. At least, of course, that's what he said. Maybe that was his way of pushing you out, without saying as much. You did all your important communication with him via mail, even after he came over every day. In the last 2 years before leaving, you'd go as far into the world as to walk to his mailbox to drop off the mail. You would just slip it in his mailbox and walk right back home. Once you asked him, straight up, you asked him if he was your father. It'd be gross if true. He was old, pretty darn good and old. And your mother, as best as you can remember, and from Recep's descriptions, was young. So that'd kind of make a gross combination. And you'd like to think that if he was your father, he'd have treated you better, done something about your situation in those early years. You like to think that he would have protected you from the darkness, from the gray. Gray all around. Undulating. Mother, in the beginning, wanted to keep you a secret from everyone. That had to be the reason. That's why she kept you in the dark. That's why your earliest memories have no sense of love in them. Do you even know what love is? Isn't a child supposed to get that sensation from the embrace, from the affection of parents, from mother, from father? Sometimes you think you know love better than the rest of the world. You know its absence. So when you feel it, when you actually experience it, you've got to be certain. But certainty, friends, is always just around the corner. You can never quite get at it. Red Jeb never answered your question. So, he may have been your father, or not. It's another mystery left unsolved. A mystery without an answer. You're not here to complain. You're not here to make everyone feel sorry for yourself. One day, there was the sound of thunder. Loud thunder. Yet, distant. It woke you up from a dream of the walls. In the dream, you're back in the closet, or sometimes in a bedroom that turns into a closet, or sometimes in a closet that has a bed, and the gray walls are all around. Sometimes the mold seeps through the edge of reality. Sometimes the walls bleed, dark red blood. Sometimes it's your feces rotting through the fabric of the walls. Sometimes it's vomit. When it's feces, you know it's your feces and not someone else's because it's on your hands, it's on your clothes, you're dirty with it, it's under your fingernails. It smells. But anyway, in the dream, every time, the one consistent feature is that the walls undulate. They move back and forth. But more often than back, they move in, towards you. They collapse in on you. That day, the thunder struck, you woke up, and wanted to escape the walls. But that wasn't the novel thought. You've had that hope, escape. You've had that aspiration for years. There was something new that day when the thunder struck. You saw your life in a flash, in an instant, at the sound of the thunder as something empowering. Not one person on all the documentaries, all the TV shows and movies, had experienced life the way you had. No one had seen the edge of reality break like you had. This gave you a power that no one else contained. You could walk all along the earth like a mutant with a secret force behind yourself. You were armed in a way no one else could ever be. You knew that life was deeper than it appeared. If it could happen to you at the very small level, at the level of the gray wall, then it could happen at bigger levels. Maybe it was inevitable, even. History teaches us this, right? Bad things happen, or new technology comes, or new thinkers. They persecuted Galileo, right? Because people couldn't grapple with their reality breaking. Galileo was introducing a mold to the walls of medieval whatever. So you walked out past that screen door. For the first time, you got past old Red Jeb's mailbox. You tried as best you could to take with you the one thing. The one thing. Which is simple. Reality is deep. Everything else, the gray, the screen door, Shadow Mother, years and years of documentaries, and Red Jebian diatribes about the evil Soviet comrades, push it all out. Start from scratch. Assume nothing. But reality is deep. Besides that, act both to the outside world and internally. Say it to yourself until you believe it, that you are a blank space, and that you must learn what the world is all about from the world itself. Don't trust anything from the lies of your past. Start over. Now that you've been in the world for some time now, now that you know more secrets, uncovered so much, sometimes, when you're lying in bed or staring at your hands, you feel nostalgic. Nostalgic for Red Jeb coming over, filling your mind with all these paranoia-laden fairy tales. Nostalgic for how small your world was. But most of all, nostalgic for the mold in the gray, the very first time. There have been more episodes, more moments, memories that, had you never experienced the mold, would have cemented themselves as tremendous new adventures, new extraordinary bits of reality deepening. But since you've already experienced the world literally shatter at such a young age, whatever comes next will never be as awe-inspiring as the first mold. You're going now on a new adventure. Off to experience more, maybe get more answers. Believe it or not, you're trying to find the Tree of Life. Find out what began the flow of time before mankind. But you have one thing to say, hopefully, one thing to say that you all will remember. Here it goes. The person you see standing in front of you, telling you this story, has already had her world break once. Break in half, break entire. That experience has equipped her, armed her, made her able to deal with the extraordinary uncertainty of life in this big old world. But what she didn't understand when she pushed past her front screen door, when she first heard the thunder and picked out and read her own mail to Red Jeb as if it was from someone else, what she didn't understand is that you all have a gift also, a gift that she can never have. Not again. When reality breaks, and it will, the girl you see now has come to know that Leviathans come in all shapes and sizes. When reality breaks, and it will, you all will have the distinct privilege of experiencing that for the first time. And there's nothing like the first time. Thank you. Hey, Solve the World fans, Dante Stack here. This week, we got to celebrate our 3,000th like on our Facebook page. That's super cool. However, from what I can tell, only between 20 to 25% of the listeners of Solve the World follow us on our Facebook page, maybe even slightly less. Since we're coming to the end of our run here, inching up towards episode 100, now only 7 episodes left, if you want to stay involved in the community of Solve the World, it's vitally important that you follow us on Facebook. It's easy enough to do. We're located at facebook.com/solvetheworldpodcast. And I try to post every single day on the Facebook page, and I throw in a lot of graphics, just kind of off-the-cuff comments. You'll see a lot of fan art that we're posting pretty much weekly now. And also, like this week, one fan created a Discord server. Now, I wasn't sure what a Discord server was, but he made this specifically for Solve the World, and essentially, from what I understand, it's a chat room just for Solve the World fans. So that's a great place to mingle and talk and converse with other fans, talk about the show behind my back, that's fine. So yeah, I intend to keep posting on there and keep everyone informed on what my next move is after we do episode 100. So if you want to stay involved at all, Facebook is probably the number one place to do that. Once again, that's facebook.com/solvetheworldpodcast. Follow us. Let's get up to 4,000 followers. Why not, huh? Also, tip jar, guys. Tip jar. Tip jar while you still can. Like always, all the music and sound effects used in this episode and every other episode of Solve the World are appropriately attributed and found on our show notes page at dantestack.com. Thanks. See ya.